Chapter 22. The Mary Jameson Crowd. This was my first visit to Kenya. I'd been given the opportunity to visit because my father had accepted a plum job in Nairobi with the United Nations, and part of his package was a dependents' airfare once a year, to wherever he was posted. Now, as he and his second wife were settled, they moved in diplomatic circles. This gave me the opportunity to meet and mingle with the sons and daughters of a number of English-speaking diplomats. The first Getting to Know You gathering was held at the Australian Ambassador's residence. It was followed by invitations to the homes of a number of other diplomats, the most interesting of whom was the Jameson family. Mr. Jameson worked for the Library of Congress, but my father suspected his job may have been a cover for intelligence gathering activity of some kind, which, in retrospect, seems likely. Their daughter, Mary, was a blonde bombshell. She had many Peace Corps friends, because the Jamesons' house served as the base for Peace Corps volunteers when visiting Nairobi for medical attention, or when in need of a break. I gravitated to Mary, as the fellas in her circle were a little older and involved in fascinating projects. John Johnston was one of them. He was based in Somalia. I met him at the Jamesons' house whilst he was in Nairobi, receiving medical treatment for bilharzia. John was a great raconteur, and I loved his Texan drawl. He told me how, on his arrival in Somalia, he taught English at a regional school, at the same time learning to speak Somali. He then moved to the capital, Mogadishu, where he began translating Somali poetry into English. As I was obviously fascinated by him and his stories, he went on to tell me his "How I Joined the Peace Corps" story. After completing his undergraduate degree at the University of Texas, in Austin, he was uncertain of what to do next, so he asked his family priest for guidance. The priest answered, "Son, you'll join the Peace Corps." And he did. Another story he told was about the Peace Corps' first director, Sergeant Shriver's visit to Kenya the year before. A fellow volunteer was asked to provide lunch for Shriver and his party. Wanting to impress, he blew his entire monthly allowance on a slap-up lunch. After eating, Shriver announced, "You guys are living too well. I'll be cutting your allowance." When word of this devastating decision got out, John and the other volunteers were incandescent, left wondering how they'd manage on less than not much. With my new friend Mary's encouragement, I had an innocent dalliance with John Johnson. She suggested I consider joining him in Mogadishu. This suggestion was driven by Mary's unrealistic belief that I could support myself painting portraits, as writer and artist Joy Adamson had done, whilst living in East Africa. Joy's book, Born Free, brought her work with the lioness Elsa, and her exceptional portraiture to world attention. Mary's fanciful thinking was seriously flawed, because at that point, I had no idea what kind of artist I was, but I was certain I wasn't a portrait artist. But there was a more pressing issue. As a dyed-in-the-wool realist, if I was to join John in Mogadishu, I wondered what funds we'd survive on. I was already aware that the Africa-based Peace Corps volunteers had recently had a pay cut. Did John have family money? I doubted it, and I was certain, had I joined him in Mogadishu, my father would have discontinued my allowance on the grounds of irresponsible behavior, and whatever else he could think of. My actions would have destroyed the illusion my father was determined to advance, one of familial harmony and respectability. As a result, when John returned to Mogadishu, I farewelled him with a heavy heart. I would miss our interesting late-night telephone conversations, but we promised each other we'd write. Tim Jansen was another interesting member of Mary's circle. The adopted son of the third secretary to the American ambassador to Kenya, he was born in southern Germany. His father, an African-American serviceman, was stationed in the American occupation zone at the end of World War II. Tim was placed in an orphanage at birth. When he was 7 years old, he was adopted by a childless diplomatic couple, who took him with them to the USSR, where Tim's schooling continued. Before long, He was speaking Russian as well as German and English. The highlight of Tim's time in the USSR was being selected to attend a young pioneer summer camp, the Russian version of Scouts. For him, the experience was unforgettable. Now, fast forward to Nairobi, 1967. Tim had recently returned to Nairobi from Lucerne, Switzerland, where he was studying medicine. His now widowed father had arranged a holiday job for him with the world-famous paleoanthropologists, Mary and Louis Leakey, who were based in Nairobi. The Leakeys' fame came from their late 1950s discoveries of ancient humanoids at Olduvai Gorge, in northern Tanzania. Possibly, due to the Leakeys' influence, Tim had been encouraged to take on caring for a motherless infant baboon, from the Nairobi Game Park Orphanage, whilst staying in Nairobi over Christmas. The baboon went everywhere with him in a roomy cage, stowed by the rear hatch door of his father's VW Kombi, complete with fancy safari roof, and even fancier diplomatic plates. Tim and I spent a lot of time together. We became good friends, and I suspect he had romantic intentions. But my romantic interest, though hopeless as it turned out, lay elsewhere. Nonetheless, I did accept his numerous dinner invitations. Tim and his father introduced me to globe artichokes, one single steamed artichoke, served with a small side dish of melted butter. I was shown how to pull each leaf away from the central stalk, starting at the bottom, then dipping the meaty end of the leaf into melted butter, before stripping the flesh from the leaf, by dragging it through clenched front teeth. This process was then repeated all the way up to the globe, that was then eaten with a knife and fork. It was a meditative ritual, which, whenever I've eaten steamed artichokes since, reminds me of dinners with Tim and his father. Another draw card was Tim's father's comprehensive library of books, written by contemporary African writers, and, joy of joys, he was willing to share them. I devoured everything he suggested, giving me a much deeper understanding of the challenges confronting the Kenyan people after independence. I systematically read my way through a regularly refreshed pile of fascinating books. When I'd finished reading each one, he and I'd take time to discuss the contents at length. Reading gave me an excuse to spend time alone in my bedroom, with its metal bars on all the windows. I wasn't accustomed to this kind of extreme security in either Australia or New Guinea. Here in Kenya, the metal bars were a leftover from the targeted violence directed at British expatriates during the Mau Mau uprising in the 1950s. I knew Tim was planning a number of day trips to places of interest within striking distance of Nairobi, because he had a great sense of adventure, as well as access to his father's VW Kombi. I also knew I'd be invited. I was so grateful to have the opportunity to spend time with someone my own age. And I knew intuitively, whatever Tim turned up would be fun. Bring it on. On reflection. After I returned to Australia, John Johnson and I continued to correspond, but after a while the flame of passion flickered and died. After the fact, I sensed my mother was less averse to the idea of me moving to Mogadishu. When I explained there was an unconfirmed rumor, John Johnson was President Lyndon Baines Johnson's nephew. In 2020, I contacted John, asking permission to name him in my writing. He agreed, and kindly offered to return my letters, stored in his Old Flames file since the late 1960s. Rereading them, I'm profoundly embarrassed at their general scattiness and lack of content and depth. The orphaned infant baboon. The daily care Tim's baby baboon required always took me by surprise. Often, we'd be on our way to dinner with friends before remembering we hadn't bathed the infant baboon. We'd return to the house, bath and diaper the tiny primate, before heading out once more. As a result, we were always late. After the fact, I realized I'd briefly experienced parenthood, without the preparation that comes from 9 months gestation. As I reflect on my time with Tim and his infant baboon, I realize they shared the orphan experience. Facts. John Johnson. John had a 30-year career as a folklorist and teacher at Indiana University. His master's degree from London University was based on his Somali research. Research for his doctorate was conducted in Mali, because in the interim, Somalia had descended into civil war. Throughout his career, he has published books and presented papers around the world. The American Peace Corps is an independent United States government agency that runs a volunteer program, providing social and economic development assistance to other countries. The program was established in 1961 by President John F. Kennedy. The first director of the Peace Corps was Kennedy's brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver. Volunteers are American citizens, typically with a college degree, who, after 3 months' training, work overseas for 2 years. Volunteers work with governments, schools, non-profit organizations, non-government organizations and entrepreneurs in education, youth development, community health, business, information technology, agriculture and the environment. Bilharzia. Schistosomiasis, or snail fever, is spread by contact with fresh water contaminated with parasites released from infected freshwater snails. It's life-threatening without treatment. Young Pioneers. The All-Union Pioneer Organization was named after Vladimir Lenin. A Russian version of the Scouts, the name was shortened to Young Pioneers. Attendance was compulsory for both boys and girls, between the ages of 9 and 15, living in the USSR. Young Pioneers learned social cooperation skills in publicly funded summer camps. The Leakeys. In 1959, paleoanthropologists Mary and Louis Leakey re-established excavation programs at Olduvai Gorge in Tanzania that led to the discovery of Zinjanthropus boisei, the mandible of a Homo habilis, hominid number 5, and hominid number 7. All these finds have been dated from around 2.1 million years. The couple continued to make important discoveries until their retirement. Their son, Richard Leakey, also worked in paleoanthropology and conservation. A blue sky thinker, before his death, he commissioned Daniel Libeskind to design Garen, the Museum of Humankind, to be built on a cliff edge overlooking Kenya's Rift Valley. Mau Mau Uprising. A violent anti-British secret society, active in colonial Kenya between 1952 and 1960. Mau Mau activities hastened Kenyan independence from Britain, which was granted in 1963.